December 30, 2020, it's a lot for Pedro show.
Thank you. hold your likeness, and I really don't like it when the colors fade, or it's said some other way.
Pedro Show, happy Wednesday. I think it's the last one of the year. We started off with Spiritual from John Coltrane. And then a Zed after that with It's Understanding. And, Brother Matt is on the Pleasure Point and Love Grotto because quarantino mode. But I'm not totally man alone, good people, because those software engineers in Estonia with the righteous Skype invention. I got Mr. Sam Wagstrom with me. Welcome aboard, Sam.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Right. And we got to give credit to Big Stevie Bono for making the connect, right?
Yeah, Stevie B.
Yeah.
Thanks for making it happen.
Absolutely. Now, let's talk about your journey through music. Can you give me your earliest musical recollection, Sam?
Yeah, I think it was probably Splish Splash by Bobby Darin, which was the first song I kind of asked my parents to play over and over again when I was a kid.
Now, where was this?
This was in Dallas.
Dallas, Texas.
Just north of Dallas, yeah.
Now, in the pad, so your folks, were they players or just listeners?
My mom was. She was. She played piano, and she was a church organist growing up, in her teens, basically, before she went to college. She would play the services, and she would play like impromptu weddings, when she was just practicing during the day.
Now in the pad, because your mom with the organ and the piano, there was one in the living room or something.
Yeah, it was like a Baldwin spinet, and my sister started playing from an early age, but I didn't really take lessons until maybe fifth or sixth grade, and I only took for a year. I wasn't that into it. I wanted to learn to play music, but I didn't really connect with the lessons, you know.
Yeah, because we've had a lot of people, and it seems piano lessons. Well, it seems it's a lot about the teacher.
Yeah, and she was good, but I just don't think she found a way to make it that engaging. You know, it was pretty dry, you know.
Right. Now, what about at school? Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
I was in choir in sixth grade when you kind of had to choose. I wanted to be in orchestra, but I didn't quite have enough context for it to really pursue it. So I just went with the choir. I had friends in there, and it seemed fun to learn to sing. So,
well, there's music, and so there's the piano, there's the voice. Now, what was the connect with the guitar?
I had always been into it, and I had been drawn to it. And I, as a kid, you know, electric guitar seems like it is so expensive or just so unattainable. But I went to my sister's friend's house for like holiday party, and her brother had the first electric guitar I ever held or played, and he taught me Rock You Like a Hurricane, which I learned on the spot.
Scorpions?
And, yeah, Scorps.
Scorp. You know, they had, I think it was called In Trance. That's a pretty good record. I don't know how.
Yeah.
There's a song called The Robot Man. I really like.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much the Hurricane one, but The Robot Man I liked.
Yeah, that's a good jam. But
I'm curious, what was the first record you bought with your own money?
It was definitely Thriller, Michael Jackson. You know, that was just exploding at the time.
Quincy Jones.
You know, when I was, so I was 6 years old, I guess, when it came out.
Yeah, and one of the reasons I have a Shure SM7. I heard that's you know these radio broadcaster.
Yeah, mics? Yeah.
I heard that's what he used. Very Kano too.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
What about the first gig you went and saw?
It was a pretty trippy one, but my sister talked my dad into taking, I was like 10 years old, and she talked my dad into taking us to see Bon Jovi.
Whoa.
At Reunion Arena, which is, you know, like where the big bands played at the time. And we got there, and our seats were behind the stage in like the upper deck. So we're like looking at like the back of their heads and like looking out all at like a sea of people with better seats than us. But it was fun, you know. And then a year later, I went and saw David Lee Roth, which was pretty incredible. He rappelled from the lighting rig to enter the stage. This was like during his like mountain climbing phase, I guess, for the Skyscraper tour.
Yeah.
But then the first kind of underground gig I saw was Jane's Addiction in 1988, I think. I was only like 12 years old, and I saw them at the Arcadia Theater.
Well, I was going to ask you, like, you know, the thing, junior high school, with your friends after school, basement band, bedroom band, garage band, did you do stuff like that?
Totally, and I actually have a tape of the first thing I ever wrote with my friends, and we didn't even have, I mean, I had a guitar, and my friend Jason was clearly cut out to be the front man. He was like, had the personality. I think his voice had already changed too. Like, you know, we were like 12. And then my friend Nathan was interested in playing drums, but didn't have a kit yet. So he took the rails, like two rails from a skateboard, and was like banging on this like weight set that I had in my bedroom. And we recorded a song called, I Shot the Reaper. It was about a skater who gets chased by death and then somehow overtakes him. But it was very much in the, like, suicidal tendencies, institutionalized kind of mold. With,
Mom,
like,
I just wanted a Pepsi?
Yeah. Kind of like long spoken intro, and then it just, like, erupts into the thrash, you know. But, but I still have that recording.
Start the pit.
Yeah.
Did this band have a name? Sam.
It was the first name was Mental Deficiency, which was like kind of a rip on Suicidal, I guess, you know, in spirit. And that was kind of my first band. Like Nathan got a drum set, and then Jason got a guitar. We didn't have a bass player, but that band went on to play the first gig I played, which was at the end of my eighth grade year. Somehow Jason convinced the principal to let us play the last hour of school, and we played like Misfits and Ramones and a couple of Jane's Addiction songs, all pretty sketchy versions of those tunes.
I shot whatever the Reaper. That was an original though, right?
Yeah, and that's the first thing we played together, and we were writing originals the whole time. You know, they're very unfocused, but we were at least trying, and you know, that was kind of always a focus of mine. Like I learned tunes, but I always wanted to be writing with a band. I never really wanted to be in a cover band. I wanted to make stuff up and just have fun and do kind of, you know, I don't know, kind of outrageous stuff.
Yeah.
That was kind of initial draw to playing.
Well, to me, that's the draw to the underground scene that shit was going on, and yeah, not just copying off records. Here, I want to play a Ballad of Joe Buck.
Thank you. crawdads in a see-through plastic dollar shoebox run laps. Dash shovels in sand. Feeding them, he says. Papa catches one and drops into newly six-year-old hands. The tiny crustacean received. We camp on the creek bed. Water quietly talking.
Sometimes, anytime, anyway, way aside, I sit and I wait. Sometimes, and then the world goes by.
Watt for Pedro show. That chunk of music started off with the Moon Brothers doing Ballad of Joe Buck. Then we had Pete Kane, brand new from Pete Kane, 44. He's one half of Model Home People out of D.C. Great, great band. His name is Alive, Ann Arbor, Detroit. Detroit, not Ann Arbor. Stooges are Ann Arbor. brand new, his name Alive, Witch Marks. Pineapple Empress out of South London with Live Some World. Yeah, it's hard to know how to pronounce that, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Spelled the same. Guy by Voice is Bob Pollard with the new album. Again. Always. Incredible. When Growing Was Simple, Bulmus Prendon with Monster Zero. On Death and Dying from Orthotonix. The Creek Bed by Phil Venable. The Last, the Lost Record, just came out. Vetus. Fade to Black. And finally, Mute Duo with Red Wing Blackbirds. So after a metal deficiency, what happened? When you get out of high school, right?
Well, that was actually after eighth grade. So I started high school, and I took a little break from playing. And, you know, my friend went to a different school. And then I kind of got back into playing with that same drummer and a different guitar player. And I started playing a little bit of bass in that band. That was my first first experience playing bass.
Oh, wow.
And
what kind of bass?
What's that? Sorry.
What kind?
It was just a PV that he had, and he let me borrow it. It's my friend James.
Somebody gave me a PV bass in Nashville. And the next gig was in Birmingham. And there was a band caulked at the pad, the bottle tree, right? So I thought, hey, man, you want a bass? So the bass they keeps giving. So man, what did you think about it? Because, you know, the first couple of years I played the guitar, I didn't know they had bigger strings. I thought they had skinnier necks.
Yeah, I didn't really have a ton of context for it until, like, you know, we were trying to learn those Jane's Addiction songs, and it was like not cutting it to do the bass line on a guitar. It's like, yeah, this needs to sound a lot heavier.
Eric Avery, right? But, yeah, Fleet.
Yeah, yeah.
Flea told me he's one of his favorite. He wrote some really good parts that worked well with Perk's drumming, man.
Yeah, definitely. Like, very memorable lines and kind of put the bass in the front of the band at times.
Yeah.
But actually, one of the first bass lines I learned was Brave Captain, which was a very probably kind of
fire hose.
Stick figure version of that bass line. But that and Waiting Room. We're kind of the first.
Joe Lally, he's back.
Yeah.
He's playing also with Ian, Kariki. They got a band.
Yeah, Kariki. Yeah, and the Mesthetics, too.
Oh, right, right. But I don't think Ian Mackay's in that. They got the...
Right.
I think Brendan, though, the drummer, man.
Yeah, yeah. I saw them in Chicago a couple years ago. It was really great.
Okay, so you're back with some of the guys from Metal... What was the name of this band?
It was called Television Skies, which is a Doors lyric, and the drummer was really into the Doors, and he wrote a lot of the lyrics for the band, kind of in the, like, Neil Peart model of drummer lyricist, but he didn't really sing. But he was really into poetry and writing, so he was kind of the, he was kind of spearheading that.
My favorite Jim Morrison line is, just another little lost angel. Right, City of Lights. It's his book, right, about male prostitute shit. Anyway, so that's interesting, though, that a drummer driving the band. Yeah, like the Rush. You know, if you're playing a trio, everybody thinks you're into Rush.
Right, right. And we were...
Like, you know, there's Cream and there's Jimi Hendrix, but everybody fucking thinks... And they're nice guys. I got to meet them because Les Claypool liked them, and I was opening up for him. So, okay, but what's it like for a drummer to give the direction, even though he ain't the front man?
It was cool because it was kind of a band that was looking for an identity. You know, each song sounded totally different, you know. Like, we had some really, like, rocking stuff, and then some, like, we tried to do some, like, kind of slower, groovy stuff with, you know, what we just kind of called jazz chords at the time because we didn't know what they were. But, you know, like non-power chords, basically, like trying to like kind of tiptoe into that world. But
well, how were you informing your guitar learning?
I was learning stuff off records. I was way into Fugazi at the time and was like trying to learn all those lines. And I was also really into R.E.M. kind of from the get-go and learned a lot of that stuff early on. And yeah, those were kind of the two things that I was, you know, just like consistently trying to pick off records and trying to get more and more accurate versions of those going.
And how long does this band last?
Just a couple of years. And then I started playing with the first band that really gigged when I was 15. And that band was called Giraffe and a Half. And that was like a pop punk band, very like kind of a more like rudimentary descendants. We didn't have anywhere. We were nowhere near that kind of ability. But, you know, that kind of spirit, really melodic songs and really fast.
Buzzcocks, and I was Descendants. You know, me and D Boom put out the first three Descendant albums.
Oh, I didn't know that. Cool.
Yeah, that's why you're on the show. Stuff like that. No, the great band, great guys. Billy, he's up in Fort Collins for a long time now. There's actually a movie about them called Filmage.
And yeah,
he went through some intense struggles with the brain and the heart. Cancer and shit. Oh, man. But he just keeps, he's a hard charger.
Yeah.
Hard charger, great guy. Inspiration.
I saw them about 5 years ago, and they were incredible. I mean, they sounded amazing.
So what happens after the pop punk?
That band played, that was the first band I ever played out of town with. Like, we played at Emo's in Houston and some places in Austin, Dallas, and played the first place that was, like, kind of a DIY spot in Dallas called Easy Street Theater, where a lot of touring bands came through. And we got to play on some of those bills. And then I wanted to, you know, do a band that was more kind of in the Discord touch and go mold, and start writing stuff. Cause I was really more of like a kind of rhythm guitarist, you know, in the pop punk band. And the stuff I was writing on my own was much, I don't know, kind of darker, I guess, and heavier. So I kind of enlisted two other friends and we started a band, and it was their first band, so I was trying to share anything I knew about bass and drums, and we kind of started from scratch, and the drummer and I from that band kind of played all the way through college, and that was kind of my first real band that I was a kind of a, you know, really active participant in.
And what were they called?
It was called Wiring Prank.
Wire and Prank, okay.
And we played a lot in Denton. That was kind of our home base, more so than Dallas even, because the other guys went to school up there. So,
what's a music college, right?
Yeah, North Texas.
Right, I played there one time. I'm playing there, and I asked them for a set list paper, and they gave me, like, paper with staff lines. This is a music school, yeah.
Yeah.
Ah, that's great. I liked that. I played a couple times in Denton.
Yeah, it's a cool place, and there were a lot of good bands, and it was just a good scene to grow up in, for sure.
And you toured with this band?
A little bit, you know, just in Texas. We never really got outside of Texas, but we did a lot of recording. It was one of those bands that was really, like, changing very rapidly, so We had an opportunity to release some stuff, but would always can it in favor of the next thing, which was kind of a regret. I think we should have just gone ahead and released it, but it was just like that time of your playing where you're just growing so fast that you're just kind of shedding ideas, you know?
Sure.
It was a fun band for sure.
And from there?
From there, I moved to Chicago when I was 25 with one of the guys from Wiring Prank, intending to kind of restart up here with a new rhythm section. We were both the guitar players, and it was an instrumental band at that point. And But we were writing the material together as kind of these two guitar focused things. And we moved up here, and then, you know, he lasted about a year and decided to move back.
I was going to ask you, what made you choose Chicago?
I loved the music coming from here. Like, a lot of my favorite bands were from here, and I had gotten into jazz, and I was, like, so curious about the jazz scene up here because there was so little of it in Dallas. I mean, there was no real scene. You know, there was, like, an occasional gig.
Can I say something? Next door in Fort Worth was Caravan of Dreams with Ornette.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And, you know, there were some shows out there, but it was like, like an improv scene. There wasn't much going on. It was like more traditional stuff. But yeah, I definitely saw some gigs out there, but,
understand.
Yeah. And then I had a friend up here who's a playwright, and I had done some music in his plays in Dallas, and we were kind of intending to work together, and that's actually kind of what I did for the first few years that I lived in Chicago. I wasn't really playing with other people after my friend Brian moved back to Texas, so I was just like kind of doing these live scores as like a solo player or with, you know, a couple of other people, like small ensembles. But he was really into having live music and into like putting the players on stage and having it be this thing, you know?
I got to stop here though, because we're at the end of the first hour. December 30, 2020, Dish Watt Pedro Show. Special guest, Sam Waxter. Hold tight for hour two. December 30, 2020. It's the second hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
wouldn't let it pass through here. See, there's too much danger this way, and it gets more dangerous ahead. This ain't the way we should be going. Ought to be another way instead. Ah, but you see, there's someone else deciding which way we're gonna go. I'm just a passenger, you know. I'm just a passenger. I look out the window, good Lord, the horrors that I see. People are armed to the teeth and seem to think that that's what makes them free. And then the train passes right through towns where folks ain't even got clean water to drink. We got a recipe here for disaster. Now, people, don't you think this train is rolling through fields of real bad dreams? But you and me, we're only passengers, it seems. Well, it's two long rails and a million cross ties to carry this train. But whoever's steering it down the track, I reckon they might just be insane.
Started, don't give me you all. You ever hear the one about the woman who died from lingering dread? She was a friend of mine. She worked herself to death. She was a friend of mine. I'll tell you about it. I was a bartender in an airport lounge. She used to hang around. It was a little embarrassing.
Thank you. gospel truth. Said you've been running around with a stranger who just hit town. He's got a black mustache, red Cadillac. Now he's got you and I got two. The voice lawyer's on my back. Sing again. Thank you.
Lot for Pedro show. We start off the second hour with The Lanterns doing Untitled. Sam Bennett, Passenger. Don't Get Me Started, Don't Get Me Wrong, from the World Inferno Friendship Society. Vex from the Hysterical Injury. I love that name. Sassafras with Watching You, but it's not the Kiss song. Scott H. Birum, single again, and Friend Enemy. Love is a Shared Interior. So you're doing, explain to me the soundtracks you're doing with your buddy.
So some of it was like just acoustic guitar, and then it was also me with like playing electric and doing loops and layers and stuff. It's doing mostly guitar, a little bit of lap steel. It was kind of like my first kind of foray into more ambient kind of stuff.
Give you footage to watch and you'd interpret it?
Oh, no, sorry. These were live plays. So it was,
okay.
It was on stage and usually I was on stage with the actors because he liked to kind of foreground that element of it. There was, you know, some of the shows had almost like a wall-to-wall score, you know, so it was a lot of rehearsing with the actors, and it was just like kind of, I was just kind of part of that troupe,
A lot of preparation. Weather talking. Okay. Now, you said something about lap steel. This is when you first start getting into that?
I had picked one up in Texas, and I had used it on a couple of Wiring Prank songs. Initially, I was really into Dirty Three, still am. And I was really inspired by those kinds of just like single note melodies. And so I rented a violin. I was like, okay, I'm going to try to learn to play. And I played it for a couple of days, and it just seemed so far off. You know, it just seemed like it would take me a decade to be able to play anything. So I got a lap steel as sort of like a surrogate for doing that, as a way to like play these longer kind of like melodic lines, over guitar, you know, but, as a way to kind of have those kinds of ideas, you know, as a format for doing that.
Yeah, they're tuned in fifths. But it's the legato thing, right? You want a big stretch out, sustain-y. Warren Ellis, I think.
Yeah.
I got to play with them maybe 25 years ago, a festival in Australia. And on the days off, I'd get to play with them. And then the days of the festival, we were like the Filthy Four. Really good guys. Nick.
Oh, awesome.
Jim White, drummer man. Great cat. Harry Beck.
Yeah, I got to play with Jim once, actually. I was playing with a band called the Cairo Gang, and he sat in on drums for a couple of gigs, which was like a true thrill, you know.
He's one of
my favorite drummers.
Yeah, absolutely. Beautiful musician. All three of them. And, you know, Warren is Nick Cave's main music guy now.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Incredible.
I want to play some more of the Lanterns. Walk for Pedro show? Yeah. Tell me about the Lanterns, Sam.
So that was a band that I started with my friend Ryan Weinstein. It was like a two guitar, mostly instrumental. We did a little bit of singing. We had Doug McCombs and Johnny Herndon as the rhythm section, which was great.
Tortoise guys.
Yeah, and I was a huge fan, so that was pretty incredible to play with those guys for the first time. And Ryan and I had worked up a couple tunes, and we played a few gigs, kind of switching off on guitar and bass.
And we lost you there, but I can tell the people the other songs. Cosmos Shies, but they keep you safe. Insider Trading from Jerome Parker Wells out of St. Louis. Thinking of Perception from A Snowball's Chance in Hell. Annex Junius from the New Harnessians. Yeah, I don't know what that was. Plus Dog Plus with Set. And finally, Why Would You Want to Leave the Room from Stephen Drock. Sam Waxter. So, is there still Lanterns, or is that over?
That's over for now, because Ryan and Johnny are both in L.A. now.
That's right. In fact, I should know. I did a record with Bucky Pope and the Tar Babies. Johnny Machine was on. He just tattooing.
Oh, nice.
Telling me about that. Yeah. Because there's a whole Chicago posse that moved out here, kind of east of Pasadena.
A lot of my friends moved out there in the last, 6 or 7 years.
We're talking Jeff
Ryan's
Parker.
Out there, and Emmett Kelly, and
Jeff Parker, David Yao.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
Stevie.
And Stevie, of course. But actually, Stevie I first met in Philly.
Okay.
So yeah, he's been around. He's, like a lot of people, they bounce around a little bit. It's interesting about this, doing the soundtracks for the live theater, because, for one thing, got to be pretty organized, right? You have to get all this preparation together.
Yeah, it's a lot of rehearsing, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. But you had a parallel music thing going, right?
Yeah, definitely the whole time. I was, writing stuff. Kind of early on, I was doing theater stuff and writing and recording stuff on my own, kind of just getting into recording for the first time. And then it was kind of just like inhabiting both worlds more and more until about 2010, when my friend Brian Torrey Scott, who was the playwright, he moved to Virginia. So that was kind of like the end of the theater stuff for me. And then I was just... playing in multiple bands at that time.
What, like, it's not your own band? You're like kind of side mouse?
Yeah. The Lanterns was my own band with Ryan. I was filling in a lot on a lot of gigs. I was good friends, or am good friends, with Emmett Kelly, and he was, on tour a lot. And I would fill in for him with, like, Azita. That's how I started playing with her.
Yeah.
And, Jim Becker from Caliphone. And, just kind of local stuff that was happening.
Well, you had good connects. Emmett's going to be on the show coming up. Stevie hooked that up, too.
So, excellent.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to talk with him.
Yeah.
So what about this mute duo?
That's my friend Skylar Rao and I, and it's pedal steel and drums. We met at the Rainbow Club in Chicago, where we were both working. And he's kind of from like a hardcore background. He plays in this band called Rash. That's an incredible hardcore band. Just put out a new record. But he was interested in free playing and getting more and more into the improv world. And he was doing on a lot of those gigs. And he knew that I played pedal steel and was interested in doing some stuff with that. So we played this improvised music series at Myopic Books. It's like a long-running series that's been going like 20 years, where you play it upstairs on a Monday night, and it's just – it's supposed to be people you've never played with before, and it's just, you know, you just go for it. And I played lap steel and he played drums, and it there was something to it. So we just kind of kept doing these shows as a duo, and also adding other members. You know, we'd play with guitarists and bassists and horn players, but we started kind of doing these shows as a duo, and I started writing these really kind of simple motifs to kind of improvise around. So it's a lot of like free drumming, but with some, you know, kind of skeletal melodies and a lot of kind of like, atmosphere and drone and stuff.
Yeah. Really interesting. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, December 30, 2020 edition. Wild Pedro Show special guest, Sam Wagstaer. Hold up tight for hour three. December 30, 2020. It's the third hour of the Walk from Pedro Show.
Sunday morning. Highways, and I stand to face a new dawn. Sunday morning, a new day is born.
Such a long way to go, and so little time together. Such a long way to go.
But I want you to remember all that love we used to know. Think of me sometimes, my love.
Morning,
Saturday.
Pedro Show. We start off the third hour with Overland Line from Mutant Duo, then Crane with Cross the Ocean. Fatso Jetson, that's got a Mario Lally, great cat. Monoxide Dreams, I think Vince Maroney helped. He's got his brother on the bass. Portugal, Japan with Shadow. It says from their live reunion gig. Yeah, I gotta have to say that shit. Okay. The New Lessers, Morning, Sad Morning. And yeah, you guessed it, people. It's spelled different both mornings. The New Lessers. I think they're Polish guys, yeah. And the Father Costume, C. Orange. That's you, that, or you're part of, right? What is the Father Costume?
That's my kind of outlet for songwriting with my partner, Gillian Lise, and it's a couple friends, Kent Lambert and Michael Hartman. But that's kind of my first just kind of traditional pop songs and kind of an outlet for, you know, for that. And it's kind of lyric focused and you know, just kind of like mostly like concise pop songs, but also kind of influenced by like kind of 70s country, like Waylon and Willie Nelson and Kris Kristofferson, but kind of in an oblique way. It's kind of like an attempt to fuse that kind of stuff with like more of like post-punk kind of sounding songwriting.
Now, you know, a couple of weeks ago I had a cat on. He's an England guy, but he's living in Nashville. His name is Spencer Cullen, and he's a pedal steel guy. Because you mentioned pedal, and before we were talking lap, and I want you to tell the listeners, man, about the difference. I mean, yeah, there's a little bar that you got put on the strings, but that's about...
Yeah, I mean, basically lap steel, you're more or less tied to one chord shape, so you're just kind of, whatever the open tuning is, usually it's like 6 or 8 strings, and the bar is just kind of moving that chord up and down the neck, And you can do little slants and stuff and get different intervals. But the pedal steel was invented so you can basically get different voicings within that. So you're actually physically pulling the strings into a different chord shape. So you can, you know, without moving your hand, you can get, you know, a fourth chord or a minor chord or, you know, the dominant seventh, depending on how yours is set up. But in order to do that, it takes this, you know, pretty Byzantine contraption, that has been developed, you know, since basically like the late '50s. It was kind of like mostly like standardized in the '70s, I would say, by, like Showbud and Emmons.
What about Sneaky Pete?
Sneaky Pete?
Yeah.
Yeah. He played, mostly like C6, I think, which is, kind of the less common of the two, pedal steel necks. Most pedal steels are, you know, a double neck with C6 and E9, but E9 is probably what you hear most of the time. C6 is more like Western swing, has like kind of a more like, kind of Hawaiian sound, but he played that, almost exclusively and was like one of the first guys to kind of use effects and kind of take it into like a more psychedelic direction.
Right. And he's on some of that country rock stuff you were kind of alluding to.
Yeah, yeah, the Burrito Brothers stuff.
Flying Burrito Brothers, right? Bernie Lane.
Yeah. Incredible, like, traditional playing combined with, like, pretty out, like, sounds, you know. So, yeah, he's definitely kind of an all-time favorite.
The cats at Cherokee knew him, and I got to meet him up in...
Nice.
Yeah, right near Fairfax High. Like Fairfax and Melrose, the days of like $1,500 a day.
Wow.
Can you imagine that shit? Yeah, I was doing Ball Harbor tugboat. Yeah, I mean, my heart bleeds pink lemonade, you know, when I'm feeling sorry for that system. I want to play here more your father costume.
Missed it at night. Thank you. Okay.
I would say is like one of the
Susan Alcorn?
Kind of like, yeah, she's like kind of helped kind of usher in a new era of people who play traditional stuff, but also play free and do all kinds of things, you know.
People, we're talking about the pedal steel and people, because there's an uptight thing amongst, Spencer was saying the same thing about Sneaky Pete a couple of weeks ago, that like, yeah, you're a heretic, you're fucking with the,
Yeah, I mean, like on the, you know, there's like, there's the Steel Guitar Forum, which is like a pretty established forum where people trade ideas and tips and like, you know, even like charts and stuff. And there are definitely some guys on there who resist like taking it out of a country context. But I think most people are interested in like the possibilities of it, because it, there's a lot that hasn't been done with it. You know, it's a pretty new instrument.
Yeah. There's so much possibility with it. Jesus.
Yeah.
I should tell the people, we heard Glass of Ice from the Father Costume, Mika Levi with Pain, Zeno Beach from the Xenochronic AMM All-Stars. They invited me aboard for that journey. And then finally, Sam Wagstaff with The Sun Return. This is your own name.
Yeah, and that's kind of the newest ambient recording that I've done. That's just pedal steel. And I've been doing some solo shows in the last few years, and I've done, I guess that would be like the fourth release I've done under my own name. It's kind of this more open-ended kind of ambient playing. The steel definitely lends itself to that, and I've been kind of exploring that, and it's a nice way to play solo. Yeah, that one's actually not out yet, but I just got it mastered, so I thought I'd...
Well, thank you for letting me have the privilege of bringing it into the world. So, Sam, you consider yourself a pedal steel man now?
Yeah, I guess I do. I probably play that more than guitar at this point, just because I'm really trying to dig into it, and, you know, experimenting with it, and also I'm trying to learn old tunes and learn, like, you know, learn off of records and stuff, like doing some transcriptions and stuff. So I'm kind of absorbed in that right now. But I still like play guitar and, you know, write songs.
What
and
about
stuff.
Bass? What about bass?
Yeah, I play bass, actually in a heavy band called, Anatomy of Habit. That's, kind of like industrial post-punk. So it's like one of the like louder, heavier bands I've ever played in. And I hadn't really done anything like that in a long time, but, Skylar from Muto is the drummer. So we're the rhythm section for that band. And oh, wow. I actually play some lap steel in that band too, like, the kind of dronier stuff.
There was a band in the 70s doing hard rock with a fucking pedal through a fuzz tones. And they were called Master of the Airwaves. They played in Pedro. I saw them as a teenager. And the legato thing. It's like, I don't know if you know, but Rocky Erickson had an electric auto harp player. It's just got so much presence and sustain, you know? It's pretty rock.
Yeah.
It can be rocking. It can be really rocking.
Yeah, definitely.
Sam, where can people find you on the internet?
Probably the best place is on Instagram, at the Father Costume. It's
so
kind
there's
of my
no,
main
there's no
hub.
Sam Wagstaff website.
No.
Not yet, but there will be.
And then Sam Wagstaff Bandcamp is kind of my solo stuff.
Sure.
But,
That's great.
But yeah, the IG is kind of the hub that I use for like announcing projects and gigs and stuff.
I know, but you know, that's another man's site.
Yeah. I got to get my own thing going.
So
for
what,
sure.
what it's like is like you put up flyers on AT&T's telephone pole, which is okay with me. It's okay with me. And man, I love what you're doing. You know, musically.
Well, thank you, man.
And what a journey. So interesting. These different parts of your musical journey has informed where you are now. Ain't that a trip? Could you ever imagine that way back? No.
Definitely not. No, it's like it just kind of keeps unraveling. So I'm just, you know, I'm glad that I'm in a city that is really good for that, and, you know, continue to learn from amazing people. So
You should tell people what's the URL for that forum with the pedal steel.
Oh, it's just the steel guitar forum dot, I think it's .net.
Steelguitarforum.net, people. Because like you said, it's a new instrument and it's growing. And you're one of the fucking pioneers, brother.
Well, thank you, man. I really appreciate that.
Okay. This Spencer cat, too, is good. That was on the show. I've always been amazed by it. I don't know. But thanks. So a big honor to have you aboard. People, it's been the December 30, 2020 edition of WAP Peter Show. Keep your powder dry.